Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Today, an obviously sensitive topic, teens and porn, and more specifically, how the easily available nature of online pornography may be influencing your teen's emerging sexuality. We're taking on this topic today for a very specific reason, and that is experts say there's a problem and it's not being discussed. But there's little doubt that with all this explicit material out there that's only three clicks away on any mouse, on any computer, it's having an impact. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back today to share some insights and take listener calls. He's a board-certified family psychologist and writes the weekly Double Take advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. Dr. Wes authors the Dear Dr. Wes series of books for teens and parents and a forthcoming guide to discussing to successful living with ADHD. That's titled, I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. We'll tell you in just a moment how you can get a copy of that new book. And Wes Crenshaw, welcome back. Always good to have you.
Nice to be here, Professor.
Yeah, getting a lot of that these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, I bet.
We're treading on some treacherous turf today. So why are we doing it, Wes? Why is this topic worth discussing?
Well, it's been increasingly over the last couple of years, I begin to see, shall we say, more diverse sexual practices appearing in the discussions that kids are talking with me about, kids yeah. down to about the age of 15, I would say, and on up to their mid-20s. Those are still kids for me as I am 50 now. So I track that back a little bit, and it's pretty clear to me that that is coming from the last 4 years' dramatic increase in exposure to sexually explicit material. And I think we're having to add that to our discussion.
I've noticed you've been writing a lot in the last year or so on this new wave of online pornography and how it's impacting teens. I mean, what's so different about explicit content now compared to, you know, when you and I were kids?
Well, there are about three factors that come into play. The first is just simply the ease of availability.
Yeah.
And the
three
second,
clicks.
Yeah, exactly. And the second is there's no cost involved. And the third is that it's simply the explicitness. And by this, I mean that by anybody's estimation, that which is portrayed in these videos is extreme. It's extremely explicit behavior.
But what makes it so extreme, Wes? And how have we gotten to the point that it's so completely accessible to anybody who wants to look at it?
Well, that is a long and worthwhile study. The thing you have to do is kind of go back in the history of pornography, and you can actually watch some interesting documentaries. The History Channel has some good ones, and then there are some racier ones, of course, on HBO and Showtime, and they really dissect this history from all the way back to the present, and I'm just kind of extending that today. But always, as you look back in that history, you find there have been some limits on what is decent and versus obscene.
Mm-hmm.
And those limits really are gone now.
Completely.
Pretty much, because the thing that the internet does, it democratizes information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good and beautiful thing. And then it's also a dark and problematic
thing, depending
on what that information is.
Give us some examples of what you're talking about here.
Well, if you go back to like the early 50s to say the late 60s, you find that what I call the Playboy magazine era. And, you know, this magazine goes back before we were born. And so.
Oh, I remember it well.
Well, sure. And what you saw was of a limited exposure. There was a preclusion on showing any male nudity or the pubic region of women. It was all about bare breasts, and any other nudity was very carefully shot to hide that. And then along in about 69, Penthouse magazine showed up and came over from Europe and began showing more of the female body, still not male nudity.
And in a sense, that set off an arms race, right?
It did. Yeah. New York Magazine said at the time, each of these magazines is striving to show just a little bit more than the other without getting too crude. So you see there's a limit, but it's all pushing that limit. And that's kind of how things went on into the 70s.
And so you're saying those boundaries are what, all but gone at this point, or sort of where are we?
Well, there's been a steep escalation in the pushing of whatever boundaries there were in the last few years, and I'll kind of get into how that's happened shortly. But before that, you always had these like cheap 8mm films that people would buy, and you had to have this machine to run them, and it wasn't a real cheap price point for the average person to get into. And then in the early 70s, there's the movie that we've all heard of, Deep Throat. It became a Watergate term because those things happened at the same time.
Yes, they
it had
did.
A different meaning there. But that movie is really what brought pornography into the mainstream. And there's actually a very good film, straight documentary film, called Inside Deep Throat that goes through in detail what that era was like. And it got America talking, but it also created quite a backlash, both legally. The courts made all sorts of attempts to limit it unsuccessfully, actually probably promoted it more. And also famously with Gloria Steinem, who led the women's movement and was very much opposed to this because she saw it as a by default an exploitation of women. There's a famous TV, I can't think, it was Donahue or a show like that, where she faced off against Hefner. And you
saw this.
It's quite, it's in the movie, the Inside Deep Throat movie. It's amazing to see because you see how out of date Hefner is at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And she calls him out on all these things. And that really got people talking. And then in the middle of that dialogue, the true revolution of pornography hit.
Which was?
The VCR.
Mm.
That's what did it. And just like at that point, you could go rent Star Wars or Gone with the Wind on tape. And you remember before, we had to wait till those were on TV. And it was a big deal when they were on TV. You waited and watched them and so on. Then you had these videotape things that you stuck in a little slot, and magically there was R2-D2.
And so suddenly, though, the whole idea of you didn't have to go public to purchase your pornography, you could sort of do it within the your own home then.
Exactly. You just had to be brave enough to go to your local adult bookstore. And those in turn, as you will notice looking back, went from being these kind of seedy hole in the walls to these pretty, you know, bright supermarket looking places. So they were catering to that market and trying to make it more accessible. And at that same time, being able to rent that material allowed it to be, and demanded, in fact, that it be more explicit, because that market was allowing you to watch whatever you watched, and that the demand for more graphic material came from that.
And then I'm guessing the next big revolution after the VCR becomes the internet, right?
Exactly. And initially what happened was it simply improved access on what basically we now know as the Amazon model, where you would buy videotapes and VCRs and cut out the cute little adult store on the corner. And now you didn't have to feel uncomfortable going in there and doing this. And the adult store and the online store actually limited teen access to some degree, because you didn't have to be as sneaky. You didn't have to go in there and be carded, and you didn't have to have the cash flow to do that. But the online store required that you have a credit card. So I'm not going to tell you that teenage boys didn't find a way around that, because they did. But it still cut the flow down to where you had to put forth a lot of effort and have some money and have a credit card to do it.
We're talking about teens and pornography today, a topic that perhaps doesn't get as much attention as it probably deserves. Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence is our guest today. He writes the weekly Double Take Advice column for teens and their parents in the Lawrence Journal World. You know, we're wondering if you're having issues at home with a teen who perhaps is spending, you know, way too much time looking at porn online, or even if you suspect that's the case and you have questions about that, give us a shout, 816-235-2888. Our email address is up-to-date at kcur.org, or you can tweet us at kcurup-to-date. So between the VCR and then the internet, Wes, you're saying that the revolution has been completed in a sense, and that basically anything in the world now goes, right?
Well, pretty much, because today what we find and I mean right up to the minute, the last 4 years, pornography is more like the Xbox now. You don't have to pay to play. You remember we used to go to the video arcade and put money in the pinball machine, and it cost us something. And so we didn't get addicted to pinball unless we were independently wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
The same is true for explicit material. Now that you can access this, if you have the machine for free, there's no limit. And there's no limit on explicitness either.
And that's where the rubber is hitting the road here. That's why we're sitting here talking, right? It's all there now.
Yeah, two things happened 4 years ago, roughly 4 years ago. You have the YouTube technology, and I'm not saying this level of explicitness is available on YouTube. It's not, but it's the same technology. And you had high-speed internet, and you also had the 4G networks on the phone. So you can stream material, as we all know, at a high rate of speed and consume it much more efficiently than you could 5 years ago. And that's really opened up the market.
Okay. Again, if you think that perhaps your own son or daughter's sexuality is being affected by all of this free, online, very pornographic content, we want to hear from you. How is this affecting your kids out there? 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or again, tweet us @kcurupdate. Okay, so what's next here? So the first thing that people do with it is make pornography because they have there's video cameras available. That's one other aspect of all this, right? You can make your own very easily.
Well, and I think it's always interesting if you look at the history of this going way back hundreds of years. You know, the printing press, film, audio, video, broadband, right down the line. The first thing anybody ever does with this kind of media is make something explicit. You see these ancient printing press pornographies that were done right off the bat, and that's been true too now. But what's really become kind of strange is that the business model for this allows for something you've never seen before. It used to be that the mob would get involved because pornography was so profitable. And now tons of it is for free because they set it up as a loss leader. So you're drawn in by this free explicit material, and then they just hit you with ads left and right for the purchased products.
But you do wonder how the whole model survives, given the fact it's free, it's easily to navigate around the ads, right?
It is, and this is why I don't. Some MBA needs to spend some time figuring this out because it's too complicated for me. It appears to me that the profit is there sufficiently because of the breadth of viewers. And so they can handle the maybe 90% of people that aren't purchasing anything simply because of, let's say, the 10% that are.
Yeah.
So that leaves all this free material. It's sort of like in Vegas. If you walk down the streets of Vegas, brochures for sexually explicit services just blow down the street.
Yeah.
They're all over. And that's kind of what it's like, except you don't have to go to Vegas to have all that free content up in your face.
Okay. Again, our number here, 816-235-2888. We're wondering if your son or daughter's school offers sex education classes. If not, where are they getting their information? How fearful are you about the cheap availability of all this online porn? 816-235-2888. And our email address, again, updatedate@kcur.org. We're hoping to get some folks to call to begin a conversation on a topic that, yes, is hard to talk about, but we thought it was important to have Dr. Wes Crenshaw come in today and talk about all this. So I guess all this is happening, Wes, and then you're left with the teenagers themselves and how it begins to affect them and where their own heads are at, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly why I did the research on this that I did, because it exists sometimes apart from our awareness. And I have a number of concerns about it, the first of which is simply that it's bad information. And I don't mean morally bad. I'm not here today to judge anybody's sexual practices.
The information that you see online,
right?
The videos and that
exactly.
kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That does not convey a lot of the richness of sexuality. It doesn't convey much of it at all. And so there are little things like the context that are just completely left out. There is a sort of gravitating towards certain body images, you know, the Barbie-looking model, or you can kind of imagine what's preferred in male actors.
Enhance this, enhance that, and pretty soon you're talking about stuff you'll never be able to reach in your lifetime.
That is exactly right. It creates a really vivid image. And this is one of the things that young women and some not-so-young women are offended by in pornography, and I understand that, that this is setting a standard that they can't feel comfortable with or feel like they're in competition with. So there's that. But there's also even worse issues than that, and that is a lot of this material is overtly violent. It is as violent as it gets. Now, I believe, as best I can understand it, that that's consensual behavior. It's what's referred to as sadomasochism.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not here to judge somebody who practices that, but when it's being handed out on the street corner of the internet for free for anyone to look at without any form of identification, I think that overrides, for teenagers, their neurological capacity to understand the difference between what is a cartoon, essentially, and what is actual, useful, healthy sexual interplay between consenting people.
Yeah.
And it, you know, these videos completely leave out part of the context, which is consent. It isn't made clear because that's not near as visually stimulating to say this person is consenting to this violent act. That takes away the, you know, imagery of it.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Again, our topic today, teens and porn and how this might be affecting their sexuality. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest today. He's one of our regular monthly guests here on Up to Date. Mac from Kansas City, Missouri. Mac, good morning.
Well, Dr. Crenshaw.
Hi.
I was curious as far as who is really using these services. Do girls watch it as much as boys do?
That's a really good question.
That's a great question, Mac.
Okay, so...
Because my sense is that boys watch it a lot more, am I right?
Yeah, well, you know, this is so much more of a complex question right now, and he asked the right question, so let me explain it. I actually, as part of preparing for the shows, I often talk with kids I know, and I have a pretty extensive network. We jokingly call it awkward question time, and it's only awkward for me because they're never weirded out by any of these questions.
And that's a generational change too, right?
Completely.
They're willing to talk about it. Not a big deal to them.
Yeah, and it's actually truer in the last 8 or 10 years even. It's not a full generation. So I asked this question. No, one person even was bothered with the question, and that was okay. Nobody has to answer awkward question day. Everybody else, oh my gosh, they were conversant as can be about this. And this is mostly young women. And I got every opinion about this from, I hate it, I think it's exploitative, really very similar to the Gloria Steinem view. It's exploitative by default. It sets a standard that I can't meet. I don't like my boyfriend watching it. I know he does, but I don't like it, etc. Two, I'm glad it exists. I don't know what I'd do without it. So young women are consuming, I believe they are consuming it in a far lower rate than boys, but I can't prove that. I think it's something that needs to be studied to really answer that question. But boys certainly are the primary consumers, but girls are working on that too.
I mean, everybody sort of looks at it that way. I mean, I guess the question is why, Wes? I mean, why is the male so much more drawn to visual stimulation than the female?
Well, it's always been my theory, and that's been challenged recently with some of these conversations, that guys, particularly in that age range, say 13 to 25 or 6, are so interested in novelty. One of the things with couples, adult couples, who have pornography issues, usually the guy is using it and the wife does not approve. One of the things that the wife has to understand in really seeing where she stands in this is that guys are not replacing their partner with pornography in any way. It's the diversity of what they see. Their search for novelty is stimulated by that.
Hmm.
So that applies equally to single teenage boys. And that's fine from a sexological standpoint. There's nothing wrong with that, except that there's a limit on how weird stuff can get. And if you are really watching a lot of this in this unlimited buffet-style system, you're going to keep looking for novelty, and they're going to keep dishing it out, and that tends to go increasingly towards the explicit, violent, degrading, humiliating, weird material. And that's where we get such, and when you're a kid, like I say, you don't have the neurological filter necessary to understand. That's the Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote version of Animal Kingdom, not the Animal Planet version, the realistic version.
Teens and porn is our topic today. How concerned are you about your own kids and how much easy exposure they can have to pornography online? Back to some calls here at 816-235-2888. Bill from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. Just a couple of comments. One is, over the last century, children have become sexually active, not active, but mature earlier in life than they were a century ago. So that, on the front end, they're exploring sex, and their bodies are telling them more about sex or moving them to sexuality earlier.
And by that, can I ask you a quick question? By that, you're referring to the actual physical age of menstruation, et cetera. Gotcha. Go ahead.
That's correct.
That is true.
Secondly, we have delayed marriage from 18, 19 to 20 to late 20s. And so in the prime of young people's lives, sexual lives, they're not married, but their urges are starting earlier and postponing marriage to later. What are they to do?
That's
my comment.
I think you make a really good sociological point there, and it's absolutely correct. And let me add a thought or two to the first point you made, which is they are physically more mature. There is, in fact, no evidence they are more emotionally or cognitively mature. And so not only do you have the point about them reaching puberty sooner and thus having more sexual energy earlier, they don't have the brain power to fully manage that wisely until the early to mid-20s. Hmm. And by that time, the vast majority of young adults are sexually active. So I think the caller is sort of implying, doesn't pornography serve a function for kids? I think I'm getting that from what he was saying, that you know, wouldn't it be better for them to be self-reliant sexually, shall we say? And you know, there's an argument to be made for that. My concern is that the quality of the pornography is illustrating things that I think are not helpful sexual behaviors. And then boys, and I know this factually because I do nothing but sit around and talk to kids, is that boys are then asking for what they see on pornography to be a part of their sex lives.
Mm-hmm.
And pornography doesn't give you an instruction manual on how to practice certain sexual acts, much less there's nothing in there about safe sex, to say the least.
Yeah.
So they get this high-powered dose of oomph sexually, and none of the cognitive sensibilities, either within themselves neurologically or from the film, to consume that intelligently.
Yeah. You know, I guess what's not coming through here so far, Wes, is, you know, again, as a parent of two teenage boys, some of this stuff is just downright scary to me. I mean, it's such a change. It's such a change in a relatively short amount of time from where, you know, again, where we were as kids not all that long ago and where our kids are today. It is a revolution. And my sense is that social science and psychologists, you have some sense of what the bearing of all this is on our kids, but not a complete sense. We're really sort of in uncharted territory here to some extent. Am I right about that?
We're experimenting with our kids. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, I always, this is the point in every show where I say, yes, Steve, it is the point of my existence to scare you.
Yeah. And you managed to do it.
And I'm joking because, of course, that isn't what I want to do. I try to be as non-sensational about things as I can.
Yeah.
I try to say, I know kids are going to see pornography. This has been true forever. But to then draw attention to what is worrisome, and you just kind of laid it out. In addition to the overtly violent material, we have a whole genre of adult material or explicit material that is branded as degradation and humiliation.
Yeah, yeah.
And so its whole sales pitch is to illustrate usually women or gay men in being humiliated sexually and treated in what I would call sort of a sub-violent way, but it's still very aggressive, very dominant. Now, again, I'm going to say there are people who practice this in their relationships from a sexological standpoint. That's not pathological.
Yeah.
But that's not something kids are being talked with about to put in context so they understand where that fits in a larger sexual relationship, and that is scary.
Let's do this, Wes. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our conversation a little bit more to what moms and dads can do out there to deal with all this. And again, if you moms and dads are listening to this, how nervous are you about this big change in society? How are you dealing with this when it comes to your own kids, this onslaught of easy availability of online porn? 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org. Option 3, give us a tweet at KCUR UpToDate. Tom and Dave, hang on a minute. I'll be right with you. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to UpToDate on KCUR. This hour, we're tackling a tough one, folks, porn and teenagers, and how the easy availability of online porn can be affecting the emerging sexuality of our kids. It's a great concern. Not enough folks are talking about it. We are today. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. We have a full board right now. Option 2 is to send us an email, UpToDate at KCUR.org. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist from Lawrence. Wes, let's turn our conversation just a little bit to the parents out there who are wondering what on this green earth we should be doing to deal with a problem that is so difficult to deal with and sort of to wrap our arms around. A very different world out there for parents today than it was for us when we were kids. I gather, Wes, that a lot of parents really don't want to confront this new reality again, which is so different than what they knew as kids. What about that?
And I don't know if it's an active lack of attention to it or whether people are thinking, well, you know, I had a dirty magazine under my bed and a video.
So what's the big deal?
Yeah, and it is a big deal.
It's way more than that, is your point. Yeah.
And I'm no prude, and when I get this concerned about it, I think it's a pretty serious issue. And there's kind of a conundrum in this, and an earlier caller sort of alluded to it. You know, logically, if one is concerned about this violent, degrading porn and so on, and you know your child is going to see pornography on the internet, would you be wise to sort of guide them to, you know, what I, as a psychologist, think is somewhat sex positive pornography?
Yeah.
And I don't think that's really doable. I think it's a little creepy to do that. But that leaves us stuck with, like, what message do we get on? How do we communicate? And I've written up a white paper and put it on my website with this whole about 12 pages of information about the whole history, how we got to this, and then a very specific conversation you can tailor to your child to talk with them about it. I lay it out like, quote, say this.
Yeah.
And if they say this, say this.
Yeah.
And that's probably going to be a monologue because you kind of want to absolve your child of having to respond in a conversation like this. You don't want to really do what I do with teenagers and say, what do you think about pornography? Do you think it affects your life? That's a good conversation for me. If your child is really open with you and you've done a great job with that dialogue, you might be able to do it. If you haven't, then just run this game I've laid out that basically says, here's how I feel about this kind of explicit material. Here's what I think your partnership with your partner, the person you're having sex with in the future or now, should be like. It should have consent. It should have reciprocity, give and take. It should have a context. My preference as a parent, as a psychologist, is it comes within an exclusive relationship. I know I'm old-fashioned, but you are conveying that message and comparing how that fits with online pornography because you're in a competing environment at this point.
And what's your website for folks who want to know about it?
It's drwest.com, and that's dr-west.com. The other Dr. West has a great white paper on a high-fiber diet.
Oh.
Which is perfectly
fine. Different conversation, right?
Yeah.
We'll get a link to your site on our webpage, kcur.org. Just go to the up-to-date page. Okay. I also should point out that you had this forthcoming guide to successful living with ADHD. I always want to be where I'm not. That is also on your webpage. Right?
Actually, because I'm going to be looking for early readers before it's released to give me feedback on it. If there are people with ADD or the loved ones of people with ADD and they want to get an advanced copy to read, they should email me at that website and I'll put them on the list.
Again, Dr. West's email address on our website, kcur.org. Back to some phone calls here at 816-235-2888. Tom from Olathe. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, go ahead, Tom.
I'm thinking that there are harmful behaviors that result from adults to act out those bad behaviors, such as sexual raping or physical pain, or
right.
And I know that those kinds of things.
All right,
I'm gonna give you the Dr. West response to that, because this is an area of great controversy in the research, largely because you cannot prove causality. And what that means is that you can't do a research project, or they haven't been able to successfully do a research project that shows that viewing, say, violent video games, first-person shooter games, or violent pornography, et cetera, makes people behave this way. There is some research that does support what you're saying, though, insofar as when you view those things, you may be more inclined to seek that kind of behavior. So if you see forcible sex going on, you might either want a partner to role play that with you, or you might not take consent as seriously as you should. That's the one I'm worried about. So I want to stop short of saying one leads to the other. But yes, I am concerned, and I am concerned where we see increasing numbers of situations. We had one on the show last time I was here where boys usually have a drunk girl and videotape them sexually assaulting her.
Mm-hmm.
And yep, that is something that's portrayed in videos. Now, it's a little too coincidental for me to think that those two don't have some linkage. It may just be the linkage of wanting to produce your own version of that, but that's bad enough. So I think we want to not be hysterical about it, but we need to be concerned that what we see, what teenagers see, they may not filter out of their behavior.
You know, Sherry writes this interesting email at UpToDate at kcur.org. As long as Americans continue to be so prudish and nervous that they can't talk to their kids about healthy sex, relationships, and birth mm-hmm. control, then teens will turn to porn for basic information about sex.
There is no way I could agree with you more than I do. That
wow.
is true. The more that we emphasize in our discussions with kids the perversity of sexuality, the more they're drawn to the perversity of sexuality. If it's like a safe, healthy discussion in the home, then I'm not going to tell you they're not going to look at pornography, but they're going to have a context for that because you have set a message as a parent about what you believe in. And likewise, I absolutely think it's a great idea to filter that content, even though all of us know that that's not going to stop but the watching of it, but it is going to lower the total number of hours available to watch it. And it, more importantly, it sends a message that you don't believe that's content appropriate for your home. By all means, do that. I do. That's the right thing to do. But you're still going to have the conversation, because unless you live in some kind of rarefied internet-free environment
yeah.
in a hole in the ground, that access is so easy right now, it's going to happen.
T Teens and Porn is our topic today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest. 816-235-2888. Kate from Independence writes this: I'm a court-appointed special advocate in Jackson County Family Court and a social worker. More and more, she writes, I see young kids, younger than 10, for example, acting out sexually. Mm-hmm. Many times we can trace this behavior back to pornography. They have either been shown by their caregivers or watched without their caregivers' knowledge. What are the long-term ramifications for very young children and might affect the development of their sexuality and possibly lead to an increase in domestic violence?
What a good question.
Yeah, terrific.
And it actually reminds me of another point to make, and that is, and I'll answer that, but that is, if you are an adult consumer of this material, I am not here to judge you in any way, shape, or form. I am not judging this. It is your utmost responsibility to secure that material so that your children, especially children in the age group that the caller mentions, do not have access to it. And I see this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the
stuff gets left out. Yeah. It's left on the computer screen, whatever.
Yeah, it's not that hard to set up your own secret account on your computer with your own password that nobody else has. By all means, do it. And yet people don't. Passcode your phone. Anybody, I heard the other day that half the people with an iPhone don't use the passcode. Everybody listening needs to stop that.
I don't use a passcode.
Steve, yeah. you must have a very pure iPhone.
Why? You could you'd be surprised.
Cat videos on
pretty boring.
Of course,
yeah,
I have
to look
to,
at it right now. Yeah.
I have to have a passcode because of the work I do.
The work you do,
but,
sure.
But anybody who's using this kind of material on their phone absolutely needs to have a passcode. And that's to protect kids, because the answer to the question is that it is even worse if you are 10 or 11 years old at the just preteen stage, and this is where you're getting explicit information.
Yeah.
Because it comes down the pipe like a tsunami through a straw, and you don't have any context, and we know that there is some biological response to that when you become sexualized at an early age from the research on sexual abuse. And so a kid consuming that is going to be raising way more questions than their 10 or 11-year-old brain can answer.
You know, Wes, you've said that having this kind of access to explicit content is actually changing how boys learn about sex and how girls view their bodies. And I guess you're saying there's a problem even with the less extreme images that we see out there?
I think so, because first of all, you have the body image issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, boys, one of the boys will be boys things is worrying about the size of their penis.
Right.
And this is something that is held in great esteem in pornography. And that creates a sense of inadequacy in boys, as well as the rest of their well-toned actors. And the same is true with young women. One of the disturbing trends that looks or seemed good that isn't is the very large Barbie breast enhanced women are less popular in the online explicit world than the young-looking natural, well-toned, beautiful-bodied women. And when you combine that with the fact that pubic hair is a thing of the past, what bothers me is that that conveys an image of youth below the age of 18 and implies that's the golden mean of sexuality is about the 15-year-old girl. And one need not think hard on that to see why that is concerning. So you not only have an issue of implied youth, you also have an issue of girls wanting to look like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're getting a lot of the Brazilian waxing trend at this point in teenage girls.
You know, Wes, just on that point, Katie writes this, and I just you can feel her concern in her words here. As a new mom to a girl, I fear a world where she is sexually objectified even beyond how I felt as a child of the 80s and 90s. Now that padded bikinis are marketed to 8-year-olds and thong underwear for preteens, I worry about their ability to embrace her body as is and have a healthy sexual life from puberty and beyond. I'm no Puritan, I will encourage a safe exploration of sexuality and healthy relationships with others. However, I already worry about how this is possible in a hyper-sexualized world that seems more and more violent towards women, and that's exactly what we're talking about, Katie.
Gosh,
great,
Katie.
Great letter. Yeah.
Not only is it good, it's beautifully written.
Yeah.
It is poetically written. And so let me tell you, Katie, I'm not going to bet the farm on it, but I'll bet you dinner at the Cheesecake Factory that you're going to be okay, because you are on it. You've said several things about the encouragement of healthy sexuality, and you understand the seriousness of this. It's partly generational because you've grown up more in this era. So I think you're going to be all right, but you're right. As a society, we really need to be on top of this, because even the concept of what it means to be objectified is kind of out of the dialogue right now. And we're going to do a show next year on... Steve doesn't know this, but I'm calling
on what,
it,
Wes?
I'm thinking of calling it currently, What's the Matter with Boys?
Mm.
if that's not controversial.
That could be a three-month series, Wes. Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to talk more in depth about how these things are affecting the way boys couple. And I think that is directly related to then how girls respond to that. So you're on it, Katie. I have faith in you, buddy.
How porn is affecting our kids is our topic today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw, a board-certified family psychologist from Lawrence, is our guest. Let's go to Heather from Gardner. Heather, good morning. Nice to have you.
Hi. I actually just had a comment. I have my oldest is 8, and I'm pregnant with my third boy.
Congratulations. Yeah.
You're going to be busy.
And boys, it's like I have to say, like, my husband is European. He's British. He's not American. And so we actually, I'm not a prude at all either, but my mother and my parents are Mormon. So I grew up in this very, like, hyper-prudish, mm-hmm. everything's off-limits world. And I want to just tell people, you really need to start trying, even if your child is in high school now, trying to open some type of dialogue, especially if you're religious. Because my first sexual experience, I was 18, and it was anal intercourse. And I had no idea what was normal sexual relationship and what was healthy or what was normal, because that was never discussed in my home. So because my husband's British and his parents are European, and it's he's much more, they have such a different attitude about it. We have a much more open conversation about sexuality in our house. And he has a much more relaxed attitude.
Can I do something impolite and ask you how old you are? I'm curious.
I'm 31.
Okay, so you're right there in the age group that you've had a better indoctrination. And we were hearing a couple of people call in with this same sensibility
right.
that you're offering. You brought something up that I do want to just talk about. If you want to download my paper, I use more clinical language than I was willing to on the air about some of this. But the practice you described is common in pornography, and that practice is requested almost universally now of teenage girls by their boyfriends.
Yeah, and I was 18, and he was 5 years older, and I thought that was normal. But when you don't understand that, and that's
correct.
What I was kind of trying to get to, is that... I ask my little sister's 13 years younger than me. Anyways, any girls that come and talk to me about this, because I'm kind of the cool mom in the neighborhood, and they discuss things like this, or they talk about, you know, boys and all this, I explain to them, you know, can you imagine what it would be like to have sex with a man who's never seen pornography? Can you imagine how different that situation would be?
Wow.
And I think that is so mind-blowing, and none of us can actually conceive of that possibility. So you really do have to say, you know, put limits for your body, and not just putting limits for your body, but having an open discussion, not just with your children, but with your partner, and saying, I'm not comfortable with this, because I don't think most men understand what's real either, especially when they're that age. Say, hey, you know, I know you've seen this, and that may seem exciting to you, but that's really not. Just in case there's any teenagers listening, from a person who's been there and is not prudish at all. So, anyways, I just wanted to leave that with you guys, and hopefully that helps somebody.
I'm really glad you called, Heather. Thanks for the good call.
Uh-huh.
Heather's my new best friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was very well stated.
Yeah. Let's go to Caroline from Independence. Caroline, good morning. You there, Caroline? Noel from Leavenworth. Noel, you're on up today. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, sir. I'm in the military, and I work in mental health. And I was wondering how you know when it turns into addiction.
Good question.
Great question.
I didn't get to that, and I wanted to, and I'm glad you brought it up. This is why we love public radio listeners, because you always are on the synchronous with us. There's a specific, very specific definition, and you will get people who come in and say, I have a pornography addiction. And I say back to them, prove it, because that's an overstated terminology. And usually what it means, 80% of the time when somebody says that to me, what it really means is that they've gotten into a fight with their partner about their use of pornography. Specifically, pornography addiction is like any behavioral addiction, and that can include video games and golf. And I like my model railroad. Thankfully, I'm not addicted to it. And what it means is that you cannot stop, and it causes deleterious consequences, negative consequences in your life. If you are, for instance, it used to be spending. If we saw somebody spending hundreds or thousands of dollars a year that they didn't have on pornography or golf or anything else, that was part of it. Now that this is a zero price point, you can't really use that anymore. And so it becomes time spent, whether they are neglecting work, whether they're sitting at work doing it. Many companies have struggled with that issue. Whether this distracts them sexually from their partner, they're fulfilling that need outside of the marriage by watching pornography. Those are the characteristics of an addiction, and that when they recognize that problem, they're not able to interdict it themselves. So that's the answer.
You know, Sarah from Kansas City, Missouri writes us this, Wes: as a former high school counselor who talked with teens about sex, I find it absolutely frightening that abstinence-only sex education is considered adequate by many vocal people. The difference between what is advocated and reality is so vast that by the time porn is added to the mix, it's like we are on another planet.
Yes, I have increasingly moved from a position of saying that, you know, abstinence-only education is annoying, to being probably pretty destructive. It's maybe worse than none at all. Now, I want to be super, super clear. I think a crucial part of your sex talk, and I have it in that white paper, needs to be to affirm the decision not to have sex. And that's different than making it a demand. If I say to my kid, I really want to support you in your decision to not have sex, if that's what you choose, this is very empowering. And you need to also say to them that as a matter of consent, you need to respect your peer or your partner if they choose not to have sex with you. I will never forget my dad. You know how my dad got me to not smoke cigarettes? I'm going to tell you, it's going to take 5 seconds. He said one day, "You know, Wes, I used to smoke in the Army." And I said, "You did?" I couldn't believe it. He said, "I hope you never have to make the decision to smoke." That's it.
Because
he basically is saying, each of us has a choice.
Yeah.
I sure hope you don't have to choose to do it. It was brilliant. I don't think he had any idea how brilliant that was. That's what you're saying to kids, is I know you have a choice to have sex. I hope you choose to do so with dignity and respect for yourself and your partner. It's all in the white paper.
Brooke writes us this: I think it's important to say that it's okay to get excited by certain images. We all do, but it's important to talk about consent in boys and girls. And even as a feminist, I still think it's important to note that most women in these images are consenting and are getting paid. It's also important to tell teens what a normal sex life looks like. I like to remind teenage boys specifically that as you are looking at images, to keep in mind that this is someone else's daughter or sister.
All very
great
good
point.
Very good points.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Carolyn from Independence. And just a reminder, again, you can see Dr. Wes's white paper. We'll put a link to it on our website, kcur.org. Carolyn from Independence, good morning. Thanks for calling back.
Good morning. Thank you. One of the main things that I wanted to say about it was, you know, my parents, you know, never, ever talked to me about porn, ever.
And I mean, they talked to me about sex. How old are you?
I'm 21 right now. I will be 22 next month.
Okay, that just gives us kind of a social context that kind of helps. Please go ahead.
Yeah. And they never really talked to me about porn at all, you know, ever growing up. They haven't ever talked to me about it. They pretty much, the only sex talk I ever had when I was younger is, you know, making sure that I knew what the process was and telling me not ever to do it, ever. And that was it.
And I bet that was terribly helpful, wasn't it?
No, terribly. Very, very helpful, completely. You know, but the main thing I think, especially nowadays with all the free porn for kids, I mean, growing up in eighth grade, you know, I was seeing my peers do that. They weren't hiding it. They were looking at that stuff for free online, and I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe you Christian guys are doing this right now. You're in eighth grade, you know?
Yeah.
But their parents never talked to you about it to them. My parents never talked to you about it to me. So I think in the future, especially for my children, you know, and even for teens in my generation that I could make look up to me, you know, I want to talk to that. With them about that.
Carolyn, that's a great way to wrap up this hour.
Such
what a great
smart
comment.
People
smart
call,
folks
I
who call
you.
In. Yeah. I want to thank Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a psychologist in Lawrence. He writes the Double Take column for the Lawrence Journal World and co-authors the Dear Dr. Wes series of books for teens and their parents. You can find Dr. Wes's white paper on the topic we just talked about, a white paper designed to help parents have a conversation with their kids, on our website, kcur.org. Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Tomorrow on the show, we'll carry a tune with Kansas City singers Karen Allison and Joyce DiDonato as we discuss the latest projects that are bringing them back to our area. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. For KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.